The least visited park in the state is the site of some of its very oldest historic artifacts. The Department of Natural Resources, Office of Historic Preservation, and members of the Saginaw Chippewa tribe want to encourage more visitors to the Sanilac Petroglyphs Historic State Park. Joining me now is Stacy Trzynski. She's an archaeologist at the Michigan State Historic Preservation Office. And Shannon Martin, the director of the Zeebowing Center of Anishinaabe Culture and Lifeways. Stacy, where is this park?
The park is in the Thumb region of Michigan. It is near Cass City and Bad Axe. It's in a deeply rural area. It's 240 acres of floodplain forest along the Cass River, surrounded by agricultural land.
Shannon, I want to ask you what makes this site special. But before we get to that, I want to ask you about the proper way to identify your people or your tribe. You're with the Anishinaabe Center, but we also hear Ojibwa and Chippewa, as I mentioned earlier. Which should we use or not use? Which is proper?
Those are all proper.
Oh, good.
Absolutely. Chippewa is the federal government recognized name for the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan. However, our oldest language, it refers to Ojibwe. So there was a slight inflection during the government treaty era signing times with the language, and Ojibwe turned into Chippewa. But Anishinaabe is the term in the Ojibwe language that refers to the original people. So it would be Chippewa, Ojibwe, Anishinaabe, or Potawatomi Anishinaabe, or Ottawa Anishinaabe. It's the people.
The people, which is what I had been told in the past, that, you know, when you refer to your tribe, you refer to the people because we are the people. What is this site? Why is it special to the Chippewa tribe?
This site is special because it is a permanent place of spiritual understanding, reflection, and teaching for the Anishinaabe people. So not just the Ojibwe, but the Ottawa, Potawatomi, the Lenni Lenape, and those tribes that called Michigan home at one time that were Aboriginal here. So tribes that were removed or migrated to other parts of America, say like the Kickapoo, Sac and Fox, Miami. This site is significant to all of us because on that grandfather stone, we call it, or grandmother stone, contains very important teachings and messages that our ancestors left for us for future generations to learn from, to understand, and to take that knowledge and carry it into the future.
Now, we call these petroglyphs, and I want Stacy to explain to me what a petroglyph is.
Petroglyphs are carvings in stone as opposed to something like a pictograph, which is a drawing or painting on stone. So they're carvings in rock. From an archaeological point of view, they are just that, carvings in rock. But from a tribal perspective, they are teachings in rock.
So what kind of outcropping of rock is this? I mean, what kind of stone are we talking about?
It's a very soft Marshall sandstone, and this is a landscape that was created millions of years ago. And then through glaciation, about 13,000 years ago, the Ubli Channel went through the area, a wide riverbed. And that deposited sediments that over time became the soft Marshall sandstone and created the whole Cass River waterway. With the development of the Cass River system, it sort of unlocked these outcrops of Marshall sandstone, and those were the outcrops that First Peoples came and placed the carvings on.
So let's talk about those petroglyphs. What are some of these symbols? What do they mean?
One symbol in particular, probably the most prominent one that people recognize on that particular site, is called Emnodakwit in the language, and that's the shooter of knowledge into the future. The archaeologists and those that the historians call it the archer. But that carving in itself is a reminder to all people who see that our ancestors thought about us. They had great intention to leave those teachings on that rock for us to learn from one day. And that particular Emnodakwit is representational of those ancestors. Shooting
so
knowledge.
Shoot an arrow seven generations in the
into
future.
The future. Yeah. And then the body of Emnodakwit is an arrow as well. If you go and visit the site, which we hope you do, the arrow of the body is going directly to the creator. So that means that we always have the direct connection to our creator.
How many sites of petroglyphs are there around the nation?
Around the nation, there are hundreds. Most people think of petroglyphs and they think of the American Southwest. In the Great Lakes region, there are the Peterborough petroglyphs in Ontario. There's the Jeffers petroglyphs in Minnesota. And most people don't know that we have petroglyphs right here in Michigan.
So it's fairly rare in the Great Lakes region.
It is fairly rare for the United States portion of the Great Lakes region, yes.
And I assume part of this is because if it's this kind of loose sandstone, it's going to be weather-worn pretty easily. What's being done to protect the petroglyphs at this site?
It's a challenge. Being soft Marshall sandstone, it's susceptible to freeze and thaw and touch and sunshine and moss and lichen. And there's no perfect way to protect a site like this. It was meant to be in this floodplain landscape. The carvings are connected to its natural landscape. It was meant to be in an open, natural environment. What the state of Michigan had done since they had acquired the property was they built an awning over it in the 80s to try to protect it from some weathering and rain and snow. And what we think that might be doing is not letting enough sunlight onto the rock, and so we get moss and lichen that
does its own damage.
Grow from the rock and does its own damage. So it's a balance between trying to learn what the site needs from a technical preservation point of view and what it also needs from a cultural preservation point of view. And the state of Michigan is being taught that piece by our tribes.
Both of you, though, want more visitors to the site. Both of you want to let people in the state and around the Great Lakes region to know about this. But I read in an Associated Press story that there's a chain link fence topped with barbed wire. That doesn't sound like you're encouraging visitors. What's going on there?
We're working on that too. Currently, the site is open from Wednesday through Sunday. It's from Memorial Day to Labor Day. The trails are always open. The park is open, but there's an enclosure that surrounds the pavilion above the carvings. Unfortunately, over the years, people have taken it upon themselves to leave graffiti and disrespect and mistreat the site. And the worst offenses of those actually happened prior to the 1920s and 1930s, where some of the carvings were actually chipped out and stolen. And a lot of graffiti was left. And you can even see graffiti that was left by 19th century loggers on the rock. And unfortunately, graffiti is a phenomenon that happens at rock art sites worldwide. It's something that's very hard to prevent. In the earlier years, the DNR erected this fence around the pavilion when it was not being interpreted during open hours. They wanted to keep people from disrespecting, stealing, vandalism. And it is not the most elegant solution. And part of what we're doing now is working on a series of grants for a series of solutions at the site, not only to reinterpret it multivocally and from a tribal-led perspective, but also to look at the conservation of the stone itself, what it needs, how much light is this covering working, what is this fence doing or really not doing. And we want to come up with some more culturally appropriate and welcoming solutions that physically protect the area, because we all want to see it last as long as it can, but also be more respectful to the natural context that it sits in. And the fence isn't doing that, but at the same time, it's a challenge to come up with an appropriate physical barrier that can protect the site when it's not being monitored. It's a beautiful park with trails and amazing brand new interpretive signage that we just put up that's bilingual in English and Anishinaabe Mo'en, and there's a lot to see, and the petroglyphs are very much there to see. So it's a gorgeous park. It's a gem of a park.
It sounds like it's a tough balance to encourage people to come see, recognize, and at the same time protect these petroglyphs. I mean, you're on the air right now encouraging people to come and visit this site. When they get there, are you going to be able to handle it and keep it all under control in a way that preserves the site?
Yeah, those are, you know, some of the tough questions that we're grappling with, and these grants are helping to facilitate those discussions. Stacy and I were part of a 5-year grant program called Intellectual Property Issues in Cultural Heritage, and that project was administered through Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, British Columbia. Through that grant, our case study was focused solely on the satellite petroglyphs, looking at the cultural preservation versus intellectual property issues, what could be shared, what couldn't be shared spiritually and from an Anishinaabe perspective. And then we were looking at long-term preservation of the site and the carvings. What could we come up with as a best solution to preserve the site as long as possible? So we actually took a trip to Peterborough to visit the glyphs there. There's a wonderful relationship going on between the Curve Lake First Nation Ojibwe and the Ministry of Natural Resources, the Parks in Ontario. They actually have an enclosure, a temperature and humidity controlled covering building over their petroglyphs. So we went there and we learned from both sides, from the government side and from the tribal perspective, what worked and what didn't work. So that's really, you know, something as a foundation to inform us in our work as we look at developing a future management and preservation plan for Sanilac.
That's Shannon Martin. She's the director of the Zibwing Center of Anishinaabe Culture and Lifeways. Also, we've been hearing from Stacy Chorzinski. She's an archaeologist at the Michigan State Historic Preservation Office and the Department of Natural Resources. Thanks very much for both of you coming in and explaining the site to us.
Thank you so much for having us.